When you have a lineup of rosé champagnes and you taste through them blind, the one that always stands out and that really couldn't be anything other than what it is the Vouet and Sorbet San Diego Sorbet. There's really no mistaking it, and actually at a blind tasting, you kind of hope someone's going to pour San Diego Sorbet for you because it's so easy to call. One way to understand a region is through its classics and its benchmarks, but another way, and which can maybe tell you even more if you wonder about it, is to understand the exceptions and why they are that way. If a wine really is singular, how did it get to be so different from all the others? Bertrand Godereau and I talk a great deal about the specifics of why is San Diego Sorbet so unique in the interview you're about to hear. It has to do with the kind of old vines that they are, where they're planted, and how they are picked. But none of that is going to make any real sense to you unless you taste the wine. So the smart folks at Crush Wine and Spirits have worked out a deal for you to be able to get some bottles for less. If you give them a call at 212-980-9463, you'll be able to pick up the Vouet and Sorbet San Diego Sorbet for $89.95 a bottle, which is a good price for a wine that's hard to find in the first place. Just remember to give Crush the offer code IDTT for me, IDTTFORME, when it comes time to place your order. You can shop online at crushwineco.com or call Crush at 212-980-9463. Either way, you can still get the good price. The San Diego Sorbet is a wine that has to be tasted to be believed. Check out the interview coming up to hear why.
I'll drink to that, where we get behind the scenes of the beverage business. I'm Levy Dalton.
I'm Erin Scala.
And here's our show today.
Are you guys ready to get warmed up? Because I am.
The Aube subregion of Champagne has long been caught between two worlds. In 400 BC, two groups, one Gaelic and one Celtic, formed a large settlement. Some of the Celts left, incidentally for the Po River, they had excellent taste and terroir. And a few centuries later, waves of Christian priests were attracted to the area, and many became martyred saints. The area was a part of Charlemagne's empire, which was split into the beginnings of modern-day France with the Treaty of Verdun. This Champagne subregion has long been perceived, especially in wine writing, as in a type of limbo between Burgundy and Champagne. While the Aube shares the Kimmeridgian soils of Chablis, they grow mostly Pinot Noir. It's difficult to find any wine writing on the Aube that doesn't draw a parallel to Burgundy, at least in soil. And in fact, before the French Revolution, the Côte de Bar was a part of the province of Burgundy. And though today they make mostly sparkling wine, or grapes intended for sparkling wine production, it was not an easy assimilation into the region of Champagne. In fact, when Champagne communities in the north attempted to kick the Aube out of Champagne in the early 1900s, the Aube responded with historic riots, and they were eventually accepted back in, but without any premier or grand cru status. For much of the 1900s, the Aube became known for blending fruit, and many growers would send their fruit north to be crushed with big houses. But over the last decade or so, things have palpably changed, and the catalytic force is coming from within the Aube. If you look at recent changes in the context of the region's past, throughout history, the Aube seems to get caught up between the tension of two forces, be it Gaelic Celtic power, paganism, and Christianity, or the idea of belonging to Burgundy or Champagne. And throughout history, each time the tension mounts between various opposing forces, the people in the Aube respond with a powerful sense of independence, and they assert their own wishes over their own destiny. This is playing out once again in the world of Champagne. One by one, growers in the Côte d'Or are starting to bottle their small plots and demonstrate how unique Pinot Noir on Kimmeridgian soils can taste. Instead of settling on blending into the larger Champagne, the Aube is carving out its own identity within Champagne. Over the last few decades, producers in the Aube have diversified the possibilities of what Champagne can be. And yet, somehow, it feels like we've only seen just the beginning of what they have to offer.
750, which is very simply the greatest resource for wholesale wine buyers on the planet, is available in many states, very probably yours. Are you a buyer in Alabama, California, Colorado, Connecticut, D.C., Delaware, Florida, Georgia, Illinois, Massachusetts, Maryland, North Carolina, South Carolina? That's right, both Carolinas.
New Jersey, New York, Pennsylvania, Texas, or Virginia, then 750 is for you. It will help you organize. It will help you sort. It will help you find what you need, and it will save you time. 750 has what you need to do your work better. Check out 750.com. There are so many powerful features, you'll start to wonder how you ever got along without it. 750.com. Find today what you'll want to drink tomorrow.
While I was doing background research for this interview, I used Peter Lim's champagneguide.net, which was very helpful in developing questions that I later asked. I would recommend that site to you if you're interested in this producer or if you're just interested in learning more about champagne.
Bertrand Gautreau on the show today of Vouet and Sorbet. Hello, sir. How are you?
So happy to be here.
So you make wine in the Côte d'Or in Champagne.
Yes, that's right.
And originally, your family was selling the grapes, and you were working in a different industry in the 80s.
Yes, that's right. It's very new for the family to have some people who make champagne. It's much more a big farm with every people of the family, my uncle, my cousin, my brothers. And the wine is looking like something to drink for the dinner and like some good food.
You were making wine at the co-op, but then also selling to Negos.
Yes, that was the story. But I selling in the Negos even after being biodynamic certificated. So it's only 3 years after that I make my own champagne.
Before you came back to the estate, which was, I believe, 98?
Yes.
You were working in the cosmetics industry?
Yes. It was 93, exactly.
Oh, okay. But
just before I was a designer in plastic cosmetic. It's only because the farm was too small and my father was young. So my girlfriends kept me in this industry and I travel small and touch to the industry.
Luxury industry?
Yes.
But then you decided to return to the farm. What precipitated that? Why the decision to return?
It was from the beginning. The industry was only a joke or something during 5 years for me to see another world, to see another thing. But I always take my holiday during harvest. So it was nice for the design office because I can be here during summer and I can take my holiday when every people coming back working. So I never forget the vineyards. I always been in vineyards. My first harvest was 86. So during 86 to 93, I have two jobs.
So you enjoyed the farm. You enjoyed working farm work.
Yes.
So you returned in 93. And then biodynamic certification in 98. What happens in between?
Between, it was a special time because I suddenly discovered that champagne was not so complicated wine and it was too much chemical wine. And when I'm coming from Guerlain or Chanel, I imagined that champagne was a very well-known wine in the world. People are at the top of the respect of nature, and it was exactly the opposite. There is so much money to do in Champagne that we don't take any risk, so all is under control. And that's not my idea of the wine. It was a very surprise, a much more important surprise, certainly is to use herbicides. And using herbicides to make growing plants and to eat the fruits of the plant, for me it's unlucky or it's not usual. So I immediately stopped this practice. After, with my wife, we discovered the tasting of the real wine. And I said, yes, I've got to go in this way. Even if I don't make wine, I will be much happier, very well in my vineyards with in this way of culture.
And what were the wines that you discovered that helped you along the way?
The type of wine who helped me so much, perhaps it's the wine from Chablis or Alsace, because I like all the rigueur. I don't know.
The kind of tension and structure of those?
Yes, but the man, how they are thinking. And it's like people who spent a lot of time thinking are on the high level of what they do on their rules. And they do what they say, etc., etc. It's typical Germanese thinking, etc. So I need this beginning for me to help because I like to know what I do and why I do this. So it's much more the beginning, the testing in Alsace with Jean-Pierre Frick, for example. It's very important guys for me and to go in this way. After we meet Didier Dagneau, François Cotta in Sancerre, etc., and Vincent Dovissa. And after Anselm Celos was somebody who was very important for me. But each people who cross my road have their own importance. And perhaps much more important, simple, but it's my father because he'll let me all the decision. Even if he always have a look about what I do, he let me go or he helped me. So it's very important. And a lot of people come to visit and ask me or help me. There is always experience at home. Strong experience.
The Chablis reference is interesting because in a way, where you are in the Côte d'Ivoire, you're actually closer to Chablis, the town of it, than certain major cities of Champagne.
Yes, certainly a good spot to make champagne now because it's particular way area. My grandfather was selling the grapes in Bourgogne or in Champagne. It was dependent of the price. So we are not completely in Champagne. And in 1927, we were obliged to work only with Champagne guys on Champagne houses. And that's not so good for us because we have this feeling about the wine with much more like a Bourgogne guys. Because that's what happened after in the years 80. In the years 80, our wine was too much character to make the Champagne, who was very well known at the moment, like Clicquot, etc. They need wine without any characters, not without, but small characters. And we were the bad guys, bad boys of Champagne, because we were too much. And now, at the beginning of the years 2000, there is a movement around Champagne. And the movement began with the cooker guys.
The chefs.
They want to buy Champagne in the same way that they buy potatoes. There is no labels, no marketing around the potatoes. But around the Champagne bottles, there is so much marketing. So when very well-known cooker on small cooker like wine bar thinking or discovers that you can't have Champagne without marketing, it was very nice for Côte des Bars because we are in the way of the wine naturally. So it's the area in Champagne who always progress each day. You have new winemaker or new risk in the vinification. That's very important. The second thing which is important in Côte d'Ivoire is that we are very close to the nature. Because each people have cows when he was young. There is a real link with the farm, with the vegetable, with animals, with apple, with honey, with all the normal farm. And it's easy to come in the way of Steiner for biodynamic, for example. And it's much more complicated when you are in the middle of the Côte des Blancs or Côte de Beaune in this very well-known wine area. And for a joke for us, because we always want to find one tree to put a bird in Côte des Blancs. And for us, it's very easy to be in biologic way.
You don't see the biodiversity in those more well-known regions.
Yes. We have the river, we have all is very easy. And we have the link, because our grandfather, our father, used to have animals with them, cow, sheep, pigs, etc., etc. So they know how to be in good health in all the farm. And if you are too much specialized, it's much more complicated. People who make only tomatoes after 1, 2, or 3 years, we have problem because the insect or bacteria moving and can make big problem because there is only one type of culture. So
you can get blight more easily because there's only one sort of thing and it can wipe out all of that thing.
Yes.
You know, whatever it might be that comes along to wipe it out.
I'm sure. And in my area, the vineyards are bigger because we are younger and it's not separate between all the brothers and sisters.
Oh,
I see.
There
is only one or two separate each 30 years.
The parcels are bigger.
So it's easier. I don't have any neighbors with chemical. My two neighbors are my cousin or my brother. And I can work a part of their vineyards in biodynamics. And I can get all the grapes on my vineyards without any problem, without any suspicion about using the wine to make a natural alcoholic fermentation.
So you can work around the edges of your own property to make sure that chemical sprays aren't wafting in. And at the same time, you have a little bit of a different kind of soil than a lot of regular, what we might think of as Champagne, because it's a different kind of...
Yes, sorry, a word shocked me. You say regular Champagne, but my area, it's 22% of Champagne. It's around 60 million bottles. So every people forget Côte des Bars. But it's much more important for the big houses, well-known by so much in our area. So the soil is a Chablis soil. So we are on Kimmeridgien. Kimmeridgien, it's calcare blocks, hard, and clays. And we have three levels in Kimmeridgien. So I'm on the third level. And we have a very small part of Portlandia, with the soils of the Petit Chablis. But even if the soil is typical of the Jurassic Superior, the weather is not the Chablis weather. I speak a lot about Chablis because it's my neighbor. And the weather is much more continental. So we have much more different of temperature from the day and night. And we have around 100 meters, a millimeter of water each year, much more than Chablis. So the fruits in my area obtain is maturity, full maturity, at a not a big alcohol level. So we are perfect grapes at only 10 or 11 degrees alcohol. It's perfect to make Champagne. You don't need sugar for chaptalization. And it's not too much on make heavy Champagne because that's the way now of Champagne. It's you have heavy wine. It's due to the climate with moving. And for us, it was difficult 30 years ago. And now it's very perfect. But for the future, question. You have seen image or from my vineyards or from Vincent Laval. You can see the roots of the plants were so much different, and the result of the years of the culture during the years 70, 80, 90 is that the plant don't hit in the bottom of the soil but only at the top, and when it's raining 3 weeks before harvest. The grapes growing, big, but only water.
What you found is biodynamic viticulture allows or encourages the roots of the vines to go deeper into the soil, mm-hmm. as opposed to staying towards the surface. And when you have vines that are not in that kind of viticulture, the roots do tend to stay near the surface.
Yes, that's right. This is a reality.
These days, you do run the group of biodynamic growers, right?
Sure, because the group is... Oh, I don't know if I can speak about all the variety in the... There is two type of biodynamic, or two type of people. There is people who say what they hope to do and who don't want any control. Okay. Some of them are my friends, and I'm sure they make good wine, and it's clear. But biodynamic is not protected very well, so you have so much people in biodynamic who say they are in biodynamic. What's interesting, it's when you drink the wine. There is something. If something happen, or if something don't happen. I think it's much more important. So please don't look at the label and don't have to know what you drink. That's the reality of me when I'm in a restaurant. In Champagne, there is several people, important people in the biodynamic. And for us, it's Jean-Pierre Fleury, you know, Champagne Fleury. Because he has got the thinking about biodynamic. He understands all the balance between the plants, the animals, and the importance of the human. After you have people who have a good, in fact, in biodynamic, is a winemaker who are sensitive, like Anselm Cellos, even if he's not certified, or Jérôme Prévost. It's a good family of biodynamic in Champagne. And you have the blend of these two families, who are perhaps, for me, Benoît Lay, and David, and the new guys who arrive now. I can give you all the name if you want.
But like David Leclapar, is that who you mean? Or
yes, yes.
Yeah. And Leclapar. Benoît Lay.
Benoît Lay. And now you have... Loïc Barra, you have Valérie de Marne, you have Frison, etc. On my part, for my mind, I've got the chance to stay in contact with the farm. So immediately in 2004, I got my own cow. So it's one step more. Perhaps I'm a little utopic. But I was so... I've got so good feeling when you have animals, and perhaps you know Maxime Magnon, perhaps you know Chebarral, or Nicolas Joly, etc. Even if it's stars of the wine, it's very well-known people. There is a special link when animals are in the vineyards, and much more important, I think, it's the point of view of people who are working with you. Because when you sell the big machine, the big tractor, and you begin working with an horses, Benoît Lay worked with my horses in my vineyard just before have his own horses. So it's important because you have this contact. And if you have animals, it's not possible to stay alone. You must have good friends because sometimes you need help. If you have only machine, you stopped. You picked out fuel or electricity and all is stopped. With animals, you need to be in link with your neighbors, with people who work with you, etc.
So it's not just a biodiversity of soil, but a biodiversity of community.
Yes.
So it's not a monoculture of either agriculture, yes, or culture.
I think it's so much important to prepare the compost. If you are, if you can have animals, animals eat grass close to the vineyards, and it's your first fermentation. It's not alcoholic fermentation. The first is to transform, to obtain compost.
Inside the animal, they eat and they...
What they eat, and after what you do, you, with the cheat of animals, if you want, to transform in compost.
I usually say marred, you know, give it a little more.
Yes.
Cosmopolitan flair, you know.
It's the same that to make wine. If you put wine in a bad barrel on, you don't give attention. You make a vinaigre. You know vinaigre?
Yes. Sure. Vinegar.
And you can make fantastic compost. We smell good. And every people in the village want to pick your compost for their own vegetable garden. So it's something magic. Perhaps like to transform juice of grapes in wine. It's a magic transformation. You are in two different worlds. And the compost is the first magic word. You give to the soils an idea of what he will be in the future. It's like for the bread, you give only a levain. So much more important is what's inside the compost, much more than the quantity. And it's like a spice on good food.
One of the first, well, the first thing was stopping herbicides, but then moving to biodynamic farming, getting certified in 98, but then buying cows and making your own compost after that.
Yes.
In around 2003, 2004.
What happened in 2001, it's making my first wine. So it was, as I say, a bad vintage, but I don't have any choice. Because the president of my cooperative say you have to go away.
So you got kicked out of the cooperative?
Yes. It was too complicated for the other people in the cooperative to have lovely grapes without chemical. And at the TV, in the technique, et cetera, they explain that it's not possible without chemical. It's not possible. And so many people forget that we drink wine since 8,000 years.
Before the chemicals, people were drinking wine.
And the chemical is only 50 years. So the normal wine or the traditional wine is biologic wine. And perhaps much more because we can say biodynamic because only my grandfather worked with the moon. Only my grandfather don't make only wine. He make all what's around the farm. So it's the idea of Rudolf Steiner. So perhaps we spent 8,000 years with biodynamics and only 50 with chemical. And the advertisement, publicity, and et cetera, TV, let you imagine that it's not possible without chemical, the tractor, the steel tanks, the select yeast, big marketing, and et cetera, et cetera.
And that kind of thing is often referred to as conventional.
Yes.
When in fact, it seems to be more of an aberration historically.
Yes. So that's the story, 2001, the first wine, two small problems perhaps, but to have a name, because it's not the name of my father. He don't make wine for selling. You make only to drink. And after speak with several people, Hubert de Villene, etc., we understand that the most more important is not Bertrand Gautreau. It's the village where I was born, and it's the soil is not possible to move. For me, I can disappear by the plane tomorrow when I'm coming back. So, and if you put your name on the bottles, you put a part of your spirit. So you can transform the real juice only by the power of your spirit. And you want that the bottle look like you.
Oh, you understand? I see. I do, yeah. It's and a part of your ego in a way.
For me, it's not interesting. It's much more magic to discover the fruits of the soils, of the area, of the weather, of the plant of my father, and the story of my grandfather. It's much more important. So it wasn't immediately Vouette et Sorbet. The two vineyards that my father gave to me. There is three other vineyards that I rent to my sister and my brother.
So Vouet is the name of one parcel.
And Sorbet another.
Sorbet the other. And then there's some others, which you neglected to put on the name. So
yes, because
it's in infamy. the quiet ones, the unknown.
Yes. And it's two different parcels with two different soils. The first in Kimmage, second in Portlandia.
Which is the more, what we think of as Champagne soil is Portlandia.
So that's the name. And the first, the second was to make my thinking quiet. I don't have the good word in English. But in the same way that choose the name of the Champagne, we have to choose the name of the cuvée. And Fidèle, for me, it's a challenge. In the same way. I've got to accept the result of what I give to my soil, what I give to my fruits, or what I give to my wine. I've got to accept the result. So when you get married, you don't have the same wife 20 years after. But you are Fidèle, and you growing up with her. It's the same idea. I discover my wine vintage after vintage, and I discover the wine with growing up. 10 days ago in Montreal, we make a tasting with 2004, 3, and 2. And for me, I discover my wife. Same way, wife, no? No, it's the same story. So the name Fidèle is to be with, to help, and the wine help me, and I help him, and we are together. That's the second. It's important. If you only put the name of the area of the parcel, perhaps you are not in the same link. You understand? Perhaps you say, you are the vineyard, you make the champagne. I'm not so much responsible. In the word Fidèle, I want to create a real link. Blanc d'Argile, it's a story who seems like, because it's about, with Claude Bourguignon, we work about quality of the clays, argile. And it gives us the way to select a graft in Chabis village.
You took cuttings.
There is a blend of graft.
It's for the white.
Yes. And it's really the clay, the soil, will give the information to have the good graft, etc. So for this white cépage, blanc, and clay, argile, it's the clay will give me the direction. So that's the name.
So Fidèle, all Pinot Noir.
Yes.
And the way it works is you have two bottlings that are all Pinot Noir. One is the Sainte de Sorbet, one is the Fidèle. And they're different parts in elevation of your vineyards.
Yes. Very different. It's Sainte de Sorbet is important for my grandfather because he have chosen Sélection Massale in Volnay. And they don't want to have a graft from Champagne area because when he was young in the years just after the war in 2025, I explained Champagne don't pay the grapes, don't pay the harvest, or sometimes they pay, sometimes they don't pay. So to be sure to can drink the wine and make good wine, he don't want this type of graft that big houses want to sell. So in the vineyards of Sorbet, you have a Massale from Volnay, and it's to make the quiet red wine for the family to work on the farm. And after, when I make champagne, I try to give bubble to this wine. So
because originally it was still, it was like a Côte de Champenois that you were drinking in the family.
Yes. And a part for business to sell to the big houses by the cooperative. But when I make my own champagne, I want to find the taste of my children's age. So I make a short carbonic maturation, and I imagine make a Coteau Champenois pink, rosé. but it was a joke to try to put bubbles, to make bubbles. And yeah, the first vintage is 2003. And my father drank it with no problem. So it's a good test for me. It's a very, very good test because they don't like champagne. And there is people who directly say you have to continue with the way of champagne. And now I understand that it's only wine in my three champagne where you can find a delicatesse.
What would that translate to? Like a delicacy or something more than that?
Delicacy.
Okay.
Yes.
A fine.
Like elegant.
Fine.
Like sometimes you cross the way of one woman or one guy who have something much more than us or some people.
You're talking about me right now.
Yes.
Okay. That's what I thought.
That's what I would like to obtain in my wine. Perhaps because I will have 15 years in several years. But the powerful wines, the rock and roll wines with Fidèle or Blanc d'Argile will give you so much energy. I like it every day, morning, afternoon, during the night. But it's like a gasoline. And with Seigneur Sorbet, it's much more for a special moment, special time with only my wife or my daughter or several people around me. During winter, when it's quiet, and it's not the same relation to the champagne. It's not the same. You have directly powerful wine, Fidèle and Blanc d'Argile. Art of love with Seigneur Sorbet.
Because a lot of times people talk about carbonic maceration as making an easy fruit. But what I find in that wine is that it tastes very vinous. It tastes very like a wine. There's a complexity, even though it's got carbonic. So it's actually kind of like the golden mean for me.
Yes, I can understand. But be careful. It's not because it's a fruit wine that it's Lao wine. It's a... second wine. Don't forget, we use fruits to make wine. So, perhaps the taste, the fashion test is moving always. We begin from the sugar, now it's very dry, etc. But
producers moving more towards a drier style often.
Yes. Perhaps it's not so easy to have the fruits. Perhaps. So we make too much to have the fruits. And the fruits, to have the good balance, it's not so easy. And for me, it's a challenge for each vintage. Last vintage, I don't make any Seigneur Sorbet. It's not so easy because you don't use sulfur dioxide normal. So you must have skin very hard, very strong. Not strong, I don't know.
It can't have rot. Is that what you mean? Like it needs to be thick skins?
Yes. Like. Solid skins. So it's not possible to go and harvest and take all the grapes. You have a big section in the vineyard. That's important. That's the first thing. Second thing, you have to stay with complete grapes. Don't take off the stamp. And go on harvest only in the morning, because in the afternoon the fruits are not the same. It's like for cranberry tomatoes. If you go in your garden in the afternoon, it's not possible to conserve 1 week. If you cut in the morning, you can conserve 1 week without fridge. Tomatoes is fantastic. So it's the same for the grapes. So you have not too much time to go on a harvest, make a big selection. You're worried about the moon, if she's going up or going down. And after, you have to conserve all the skin, don't crush. When you put on your tanks, you crash, but only when you're tasting that all your carbonic maceration is at the top. So the fruits is young fruits, but you begin to obtain the tannic of the stems and of the leaves, I think, and to make a balance between the fruits and the amertume. And here you can go on fresh. So it's a very difficult and very difficult, not difficult, but you must be here, not on your phone or on your website.
Sorry, you must I said here.
Yes.
I'm just kidding.
And if you make carbonic maceration wine, it's well hazy. And it's all the same taste. I'm okay with you. But it's a wine for drinking quickly, carbonic maceration, because we imagine it's too hazy. But if you speak one evening with Marcel Lapierre, you understand that it's something else, or with Pascal Pacalet. And it's this alcoholic fermentation, it's this carbonic fermentation who interesting me.
Carbonic on one side, but also stems on the other. And I wonder if it's the stems that I really respond to in terms of that kind of vinous, taste like serious wine texture that I get from Sagnier de Sorbet sometimes.
Yes, I'm sure it's responsible of the texture of the longer in your tasting. Yes. But it's a balance during your carbonic fermentation. We picked only the grapes who are smaller than your hand when it's closed. So it's small grapes.
Bunches, though. Is that a bunch? That would be a bunch smaller than your hand.
Smaller.
Right. Not one grape, though.
One grape. If you have a lovely young student, it's a very small.
No, but that's a grape bunch, right? Yes. You mean like several grapes?
No, only one.
Oh, okay.
But smaller than that.
Oh, okay.
And in Pinot Noir, it's a small. It helps you to select the bottom of the plant grapes and the skin with good. And
so on the vine, certain grapes get bigger depending on where their placement is towards the sun and the canopy. The leaves cover some and they stay smaller.
Yes, if they are at the bottom, they're smaller. At the end of the plant, they are bigger. Because la sève, the blood, if you want, go immediately to the top of the plant.
Oh, the sap comes from the top.
Yes.
So.
Yes.
And what do you do with those bigger grapes? Where is that? Where
the? I'm coming back. I let on the plant. We don't cut. And we're coming back 2 or 3 days after to cut and fresh in Fidèle.
Oh, so that Pinot Noir goes into the Fidèle.
Yes. Yes, yes. And the plant there is less grapes because we picked for Sagnier de Sorbet. So it's easier to continue for the maturity, for the bigger.
Sure, it's kind of like a green harvest in a way.
Yes.
And the reason you're doing that is because you want stronger skins.
Yes.
In the Sagnier de Sorbet wine, you want strong skins because you're going to do carbonic on it and you don't want the skins to burst.
Yes.
Got it. Okay. So I never understood that before. Thank you. So for me, I get a lot of vinosity. Like, again, that word, you know, kind of it tastes like a serious wine often from the Sagnier de Sorbet, but also your other wines. Sometimes I also get vinosity from aging on the lees, but that's not something you do very much. You don't tend to age your wines on the lees very long. Are you not aging it on the lees for a reason?
Ah, yes. So, sorry, perhaps I don't have the good word to explain, but we don't work with sulfur dioxide. And it's like your children. If you never give them TV, for example, when they arrived at in my brother's house and there is a TV, the children go immediately on the TV. And the wine is the same with sulfur dioxide. If you always put sulfur dioxide and the wine don't see oxygen, when you open the bottle, it's broken. So if you conserve on yeast long time and when you disgorge, the wine immediately want to obtain the air, the oxygen. And for me, I preferred conserve the contact with oxygen. So you are in an organic skin outside on the grapes, and we use old barrels to continue to have exchange with oxygen. And after putting in the bottles, the skin is a mineral skin with totally closed. In the same moment, you transport your juice in the cellar. So at the beginning, you are in the organic skin with the weather, the rain, the sun, etc., etc. And after the skin, it's much closed with the wood skin of the barrels, but you are inside. The doors are open, so the temperature is moving slowly, but there is no rain in my cellar. And after you go in the cellar, in the skin, mineral skin. So you understand that the wine, the juice, the life of the juice is enclosed step by step. And I like this gorge very quickly to open the door if you want, I don't know, and give a new part of oxygen to say you're not dead. Continue to heat oxygen. Oxygen make me older each second, but it's my life and I'm happy to progress in years. And my wine need oxygen. So after, when you open your bottles, there is always a disgorgement that's on the labels. For sommelier, for people who know the wine, it means that you have to open the bottles 1 hour before or only 2 hours before. It's if he has disgorged a long time ago, you have to open 1 hour, 2 hours before. If he's disgorged only since 6 or 8 months, you can open 10 minutes before drinking. So perhaps it's kind of looking like a philosophy, but you must be happy to progress and be older each day. And for the wine, it's the same thing. I've got in my cellar all wine who are on yeast since 10 years. Okay. It's another type of wine. It's not natural champagne. It's a meaning of a guy who want to make this type of wine. Okay. See, if you conserve only 3 years on the yeast, you don't have a real moving in the taste, but your wine need oxygen immediately. Okay. If you conserve 6-7 years on the yeast, the wine eat all what it can, and it's transformed. It go on the tertiary aroma. And now it's interesting to test the wine, this type of wine. But it's another thing. Perhaps,
that's not what you typically do. That's not your thing.
But in this case, it's crazy to use plastic cokes to have a long time on the yeast. You use a natural coke. And you can progress. So I've got vintage in my cellar, but for friends of to make present for a good consumer who helped me when at the beginning, and is under cook.
Because you've been natural cook doing an experiment with a wine that originally you thought you were going to age under the lees for 10 years,
yes.
But then you stopped it a little earlier than that.
Yeah.
But that doesn't often make it to this country.
No, it's I need money.
Like, yeah. No, I hear you.
But it's important to explain, to be clear. I need money to buy my bottles, to pay people who help me, to buy my tickets of plane for see you here now. But I'm not crazy about that. So I've got a problem with the high price of the wine. And so many people make millésime with a high price, but not fantastic to drink. So I make vintage millésime. And as I'm a utopic guy, I always give like a present. I never sell a millésime. It's for people who have a birthday or who want to make a special tasting, etc. There is not so much bottles. It's so easy to make money because you are old wine or because it's a small production. Because, no, it's not because you are in biology that it's expensive. It's not because there is only 2,000 bottles that it must be expensive. It's not because it's a 2002 in bottles that you open today that it must be expensive. No. That's my point of view.
So let me explain one thing just to make sure I understand it correctly. You always do wines from a single year, except that there's a little bit of reserve wine sometimes in the Fidel. But because you don't age that wine very long on the lees, you're not allowed by the law to put the vintage on it. So you do make it from 1 year, but there's a little code, like an R and then two numbers that tells you the year. But then at the same time, you do hold back a small quantity of wine that you do age long enough to put a vintage on the label, on the lees, but that's not wine that you sell. You give it away or you celebrate with friends or you, that kind of thing.
Exactly. Your English is perfect. No, you well understand. It's good the word.
And at the same time, I almost wonder, you know, inside of what I might think of as natural wine, there's often an emphasis on a kind of fruit quality that doesn't taste old, you know, like a kind of digestible fruit, a kind of a fresh fruit. Sometimes there's, you know, leathery aromas or something else, but the fruit often tastes pretty accessible, digestible, and not a, what some people might say, overly aged kind of fruit. And it seems like you're, maybe I'm wrong, trying to preserve some of that by not aging the wine that long in the lees. So for you, some of the millésime wines that you try are a little over old.
I'm not sure to have an idea about this. Now, natural can be very old in the tasting, even with young wine. But it's too much natural for me. And it's not because it's natural that you must let your wine alone and say the juice will be transformed in wine and I can go on holiday or turn around the world to sell my natural wine. You must be here for me. And young wine have a young texture. Tasting and old wine have evolution tasting. For me, it's normal.
So you said that you didn't mind the kind of maturity that oxygen brings, whether it be to a person or to a wine. And someone that has also said that I've heard is Anselm Salos. He said something similar when I was in the room once. And what do you think that you took from him? You know, in terms of him working with you and you working with him.
From Anselm?
Yeah.
Lot of questions.
Yeah, right. More questions than answers.
It's a fantastic guy. It's because he don't give us, I speak with Jerome, he don't give us any solution. No solution. He always make us thinking about what we do before make the wine. The wine is only a result. There is no magic way of making wine in Salos.
No recipe. It's a mode of thinking.
You're responsible of what you put in your pressoir, of what you put in your barrels. And if there is something with strange, you have to look behind you. Perhaps there is something strange during your vintage, during your summer, or when you plant the vineyards, etc. After, you have to accept and correct slowly. It's like with a very, very big boat. You correct slowly. You don't turn immediately. It's like with an horses. It's not possible to change an horses of direction. You have to speak, to understand, and to to make the way middle way at the beginning and after turn slowly. So that's the thinking. It helps us to look behind us. It don't give a solution to transform the mistake in a fantastic reality. If you have a problem, there is something that you don't listen, that you don't have smell. There is something. But be sure that Anselm, for me, it's important because it helped me to make so much mistake. It helped me to accept my level, and I'm a baby and I children, and I learn each vintage. And most important explanation of Anselm is when I asked him, please, there is something I don't understand, Anselm. Why you give me your wine to put in the barrels? We don't know each other only since 2 days, etc. It's a big responsibility you give me. Why? I'm a winemaker. I can pick your names. I can pick your knowledge. I can... Yes. Why? Why? Why you give me so much? And the answer was fantastic. Say, you know, Bertrand, you know, I've got 2 children, Leah and Guillaume, and they will never learn with their father. I don't learn with my father. And if you are on a good way, if I help you to find your own way, perhaps my children can learn with you. Perhaps they can learn about Jerome. Perhaps they can. That's a fantastic answer. After, you have to give. Oh, I've got a young winemaker who makes champagne during 2 years in my cellar. And I've got now good relation with some others who growing up with me and with Jerome, with Pierre Lamandier, with Benoît Laher. Olivier Oriot is my small brother, if you want. Come at home to dynamization, he don't have anything, etc., etc., Rupert Leroy, etc. So it's a very good answer of Anselm. So perhaps Anselm knows very quickly that he can disappear, and if he conserved, his life is not interesting. Oh, that's the first and the much more important answer of Anselm for me.
So along the way, you never went to any kind of school for wine. Trained with Anselm, your dad didn't make wine. He only sold grapes and wine. What do you think some of the mistakes that have happened have been, and what have you learned from them over time now that you've been there for about 20 years?
It will be very long if I explain all the mistakes I do. There is not only Anselm, there is perhaps Raymond Laurent, perhaps Claude Bourguignon, perhaps Claude Cossura, so many people.
That have influenced you.
But there is only Anselm who making wine with Raymond Laurent. And the mistake is to do much more that it's necessary. For example, the vintage 2010 was a very nice vintage. Everybody makes good wines. It's easy. In my area, I'm sure in Champagne in general. Yes, okay. And I want to do much more. I'm like a powerful children. And with the Blanc d'Argile, I want to go one step after, and I'm waiting too much to obtain fantastic grapes, but skins are broken in 2 days. So I lost 70% of my harvest for Blanc d'Argile. It's a good lesson, because I'm only human. So you make a mistake like that. I hope not too many. But I'm free to learn and to make mistakes. That's very important. It's a part of the price of the bottle for me. If you buy one bottle of Vuité Sorbet, you help me to continue my experience, to continue learning.
The Fidèle Pinot Noir, the Blanc d'Argile Chardonnay, one is younger vines, the Chardonnay is younger vines, and the Fidèle is older vines. Different parcels. But what else should I understand about them in terms of how I should approach them or how I should understand them? How are they different?
They are from the same family, Fidèle and Blanc d'Argile. You are on Chimérigien soils, level 3, and it's what impossible to move. So it's the end of the tasting. The end of the tasting is always the soils and the climate. So the two are like two brothers, very the same brothers, the same minority tension at the end of the tasting. And that's the gasoline, the energy of the two wine. But at the beginning, there are two differences. When you put your nose on Blanc d'Argile, you always have rhubarb tasting. It's Chardonnay from selecting chablis, so small Chardonnay, with long time to obtain maturity. That's typical of rhubarb. And this rhubarb taste give you the future of the tasting. And you can imagine finish your tasting on the chablis soils, on the calcare minority, on this tension, this texture. During the tasting, you have the Chardonnay who give you the grapefruits, etc. It's logic. So I hope you have the idea of a Grand Cru in Chablis with bubbles. But his brother, Fidel, is a bad boy. You have Pinot Noir select in Volnay. So the smelling, you are in Côte de Beaune. You are in the Pinot. You are in the fresh harvest. You are in the skin. It's all what you smell during harvest, just before crushes, grabs. It's generous. And when you put in your mouth, immediately you have wine who want to exist, want to be everywhere in you. So it's all the personality of the delicate Pinot Noir from Côte de Beaune. They want to be in you, to be everywhere. But it's not normal because it's finished on the strict mineral, on the directly soils of Chablis. So it's a bad boy. He want to catch you like a delicate girl, but it always finish like a knife.
Like an Iron Sea, maybe? Is it similar for you?
Yes, why not? Why not? It's the same sort. So he take you with him, and after he say no,
he throws you out.
I'm alone on this soil. That's Fidel. But Blanc d'Argile is not the same. It's prepared you.
Do you find a difference in your wines between warmer vintages and cooler vintages?
The difference of the cold and warmer vintage is not so much difference with the biodynamic. I was surprised. I was unlucky between 2003 and 2004. But after, I understand. The vineyards are not in the same presentation than in chemical produce. And the roots are very long inside the soil. And you don't have any stress in 2003. And I conserve high level of acidity. Every people have finished harvest when I began. On the raining, it's raining, the 3 of September. And my brother finished the 22 of August. So the climate have less important on the vintage. But you find it after 8-10 years on East. The vintage coming back much more, as for me. When you disgorge immediately, there is, yes, there is difference, but you don't have to drink like a laboratory with a machine who analyze all the wine. No, there is a difference between the hot and cold vintage, but not so much. Be careful at the end of the tasting. We'll give you the minerality, the soils, the climate of the wines that you are drinking. It's not possible to move. It's only the beginning of your tasting with on the vintage, warm, cold, etc. It's coming back after a long time on the East.
So something you've told me is that not just the yeast change from year to year, because you're using native yeast and there are different ones that take over, but also the length of mallows changes significantly from year to year. Like in 8, you had really long mallows. What's that like and what does that imply?
It's a natural transformation. For me, it's crazy guys who don't want any malolactic. It's like if you don't want alcoholic fermentation, conserved fruit juice. So malolactic is a part of the growing up of the wine. Okay, that's good. After malolactic is beginning, like in a mirror with the climate of the vintage. The climate is a little difficult during the growing up of the grapes, when the grapes closed just before change of color. This time between for us, between the 10th of July to the beginning of August, it's a perfect mirror of the malolactic. If this time is cold, wet, etc., you have a malolactic who began very late. Perhaps you have to wait final July, August. If this time is short and hot malolactic, it's immediately. You can, the bacteria are very well, have much more possibility to begin immediately during alcoholic fermentation without prepared special cocktails, etc. The links make by the weather. So you have to understand your weather, you have to understand the wind, the wet in this moment, and you can prepared you for the malolactic and moving your barrels for soutirage, etc. But be quiet, and it's perfect reflex of the vintage.
So in a way, it's really 2 years, because it's the year that the grapes see the weather, and then it's the year that the mallow sees the weather, the following year.
Yes. And in laboratory, analog explain you that you have to select special yeast and special bacteria, yes, to make your malolactic. And they like, and now it's very fashion to make the malolactic during alcoholic fermentation. But what they do, they only select variety of bacteria with possible to make the two at the same time. But in the nature, the fruits who arrive during harvest is perhaps not prepared. Perhaps it transport another family of bacteria, but not those that we need to make money very quickly. So you have to listen and be quiet.
When you taste your own wines, do you find bottle variation between the same disgorgement?
No, not very easy. I can't find difference on the same dates, but only if I test in another place in another day. But on the same place on the same day, sometime, but I accept. It's the life of the wine, but not too much.
You have aspirations to go beyond 5 hectare? It's 5 hectare now, right?
It was a big question. It is a big question. With my wife, several time neighbors proposed to me to growing up. And till several years, we say no, because there is no reason. I prefer, as you say, take a young guy who have his own vineyards to show him how I do, to give him a tractor or something, help him to put in bottlings, than to catch the vineyards of the grandfather. It's not interesting to growing up. But my brother, who is 9 years more than me, is my parent. We have a special link.
Okay.
Yes. Okay. And we have Chardonnay and Pinot Noir, and the Pinot Noir go to big houses. And since 5 years, I make the culture on the Chardonnay and Pinot Blanc. And this year, I buy a part of his harvest. And in the future, I will buy 1 hectare from my brothers, but I make the compost, etc. And it's vineyards who are close to me. And he asked me to choose a massal graft when he plant, etc. We have a good relation with my brother. And he have a second job, so he makes cereals. He have another small business. So the wine is not business, it's passion. So with my wife, it was not easy to make this choice, but we make. And in 2 years, there will be a new bottles who come from the Pinot Blanc of Jean-Marie, my brother, and vinification with special for this vineyard. It's much more different than the barrels, etc. Because Pinot Blanc is a cépage who is very new for me, so it's interesting for me to learn to progress in this vinification.
What have you seen so far? How does it differ than Chardonnay?
It's the touch of generous, touch of Pinot Noir, who can give you like a lovely touch. And acidity with present, but much more like lemon. But we don't have so much Pinot Blanc because they have an oxidation very quickly. So to be in a biodynamic vinification, it's not so, you don't have a solution. Nobody do now. So it's a new story for me.
Bertrand Godereau at Vouet and Sorbet, he's looking for new stories and he's already written a few. Thank you very much for being here today.
Thank you.
Bertrand Godereau of Vouet and Sorbet. Hey, don't forget, Sandia de Sorbet from Vouet and Sorbet is being offered by Crush Wine and Spirits for a limited time only at $89.95 for listeners of the podcast. You just need to give them the promo code IDTT4ME to be able to get that price on one of the most unique rosé champagnes being made today. Give Crush Wine Co. a call at 212-980-9463 or contact them on their website, crushwineco.com, to be able to order your Sandia de Sorbet from Vouet and Sorbet. Stephen Bitterhoff, Riesling Fires Maestro, here to tell us about what's going on as we get closer to the big events.
Thanks, Levy. I wanted to reach out to my friends in the restaurants and in retail to ask them to support German wine for what I'm humbly calling Riesling Fire Week. That is Monday, January 26th to Sunday, January 31st. And what I'm asking, what I'd love people to do in the restaurants, pour a wine by the glass, pour a German wine by the glass, pour your favorite German wine by the glass and photograph it. Have fun with it. Share your photos either on Twitter or on Instagram at Riesling Fire. And that's Riesling as in the grape. And then fire is in the German word for celebration, which is F-E-I-E-R. So that's Riesling Fire. Share your photos with us. On the retail side, support German wines however you can. Case stack a German wine up at the front of the store. Do an educational session with your staff. If you have an email program, shoot out an email program on a specific German wine. Do what you can to educate and to enthuse people about German wines and about the culture of German winemakers. And do the same thing. Share your tweets and your Instagram with us at RieslingFeier, FEIER.com. And sign up on our website, www.rieslingfeier.com. Send us your information. And what we'll do is compose a national database of the great German wine programs of the U.S. And I know you're out there and you know you're there. So tell me where you are and let me put you on the Riesling Feier website so that when people are traveling various cities, various states, they know where to go to get serious German wine.
That was our show. If you're curious about what we're up to in the future, check us out on Facebook. Give us a like and you'll see all our fancy, fancy posts. It's I'll Drink to That, Talking Wine with Levy Dalton is a Facebook fan page. Hey, fan page. Yeah. We're on Twitter at Drink to That Pod. And we're also up on Instagram. Some pretty artistic shots sometimes. Sometimes not. Sometimes good, though. At Levy Opens Wine. And then I got to tell you, we're also got our own website there. It's alldrinktothatpod.com where you can stream stuff off of it or download direct episodes so you don't have to go through iTunes if you don't want to. We like to give options. We're about options here. So lots to do, lots to think about. Maybe you want a t-shirt. Maybe you like a fancy, fancy, well, they're not that fancy, but they're pretty cool. I'll Drink to That t-shirt of your very own in a variety of different colors, shapes, sizes, onesies even. I mean, you can get onesies, you can get tanks, you can get biker tanks, you can get tees, you can get other stuff, hoodies, for God's sakes. It's all up there. You can find the information up on our website if you'd like to check it out and wear what you hear. And then there's also that possibility you could shoot us some real support. Shoot us a little dough. Help keep the microphones rolling. We are here because of dedication, because of love, because of interest. But we're also here because we make the finances work, and we could always use a little help with that. Thanks for your consideration.